What really happened with your host, Mike Rivero? Because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It is Wednesday, June 21st, 2017, hump day, middle of the weekday, starting that long, slow glide down to Powhatan Friday and whatever other insanity is going to be dished out by government and corporations and the rest of it. The world just feels like it's going totally insane. Quick little program note, in our third hour today, Miriam Azizi, who's an activist in Israel dealing with family issues, she's going to be rejoining the show. Apparently a lot of new stuff is going on over there, a lot of abuses of the Israeli people, not the Palestinians. This is Israel's government abusing their own people, and so we're going to be talking about that. Phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Mike is in our control room, ready to answer the phone when you call on in. Obviously, the big upset last night down in Georgia's special election. What an upset. After months of polls saying that the Democrat, John Ossoff was ahead by all these points and everything, and he lost by 4 points. And that is despite the fact that he had the most expensive House campaign in U.S. history, $22 million, and his Republican opponent, Kathy Handel, only had $3 million, and she still beat him. I'm sorry, Karen Handel. And she still beat him. And it was amazing just to see the Democrats in shock, because if you remember before this election, they were trumpeting this as the turnaround point. This was going to be the bellwether for the midterm elections next year, and the Democrats were going to retake control of Congress, and it didn't really work on out. And what's amazing is that Karen Handel's victory party, the crowd started chanting Trump, 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 Trump. So obviously a major, major upset, disappointment for the Democrats. And I'm waiting for some Democrat to come on out and accuse Russia of having hacked the Georgia election. And again, an aspect of the liberals, they can't take responsibility for the choices they've made. Rachel Maddow is saying it was because of the weather, that there was inclement weather in Democrat-leaning counties, and they just stayed home, and that was the reason that they lost. And no, it isn't. It's because the Democratic Party, all during last year's presidential campaign, they didn't really have any ideas. They didn't really have any policies. They were playing the race card, the woman card, the gay card, and all the rest of it. They didn't have any substance inside them. And plus, a lot of Democrats are still very, very angry over what the DNC and Debbie Wasserman Schultz did to Bernie Sanders. And basically confirming that the weather wasn't behind this. Apparently, fundraising numbers are drastically low for the Democratic Party. They just had their worst May in 14 years. So the money is just not coming on in. Obviously, of course, a huge amount of money went in to John Ossoff's campaign to try and secure the victory, but it didn't do any good. It was a repeat of what happened last year, where Hillary just had all the money and all the commercials and was just spending like crazy, and Donald Trump still beat her. And apparently the latest polls are showing that the millennials are turning away from the Democratic Party. They are basically believing Trump is making America great again. They're liking the direction the country is going in. And so they're not likely to be Democratic voters in the coming years here. Julian Assange came out with a statement, Democrats will continue to lose. They are not for the hopes and dreams of working people, and that's absolutely true. I'm old enough to remember when the Democrats tried to position themselves as the party of the people, but over the last 20 years, we've seen the Democrats just as greedy and corrupt as anybody else, with the Clinton Foundation, the Uranium One deal, and so forth. And apparently over at CNN, they couldn't control their ire over the whole situation. CNN aired the entire concession speech of John Ossoff, but then when Karen Handel was giving her victory speech, they cut away from it. For breaking news. Don't want to give her any attention whatsoever. They're just that upset. Those gosh darn voters, they went on out and they didn't vote the way we wanted them to again. So basically the euphoria we saw earlier in the week, is gone and reality is setting back in. Remember the tremendous upset when Hillary lost? Nobody could believe it. She was the anointed one. And basically, these two victories in Georgia and South Carolina, where Republicans won, basically are hammering home the point. The voters are not just sick and tired of Hillary Clinton and all those corruptions. They're sick and tired of the liberal Democrat crybabies. And so the country is definitely shifting hard to the right here. But still, the liberals are out there, and this is a little bit alarming. It's only been a week since this gunman opened fire on more than a dozen Republican members of Congress at that baseball field. And up in Connecticut, a college professor said that the first responders to the shooting should have let them die because they are white. Trinity College professor Johnny Eric Williams, in a Facebook post, basically said, let them blanking die. And this is what they're teaching on our college campuses. We're going to do a quick shout-out to our honor affiliates who are just now rejoining the network. Meanwhile, over in Olympia, Washington, at Evergreen State, the students there are out there attacking the principle of the First Amendment. They basically want to chase everybody off the campus who doesn't agree with them, and they're out there saying blank free speech. They want to weed out the conservatives on the university campuses. So it's getting fanatical, dangerously fanatical and hysterical. In fact, there's an article over at Zero Hedge saying the extremism experts who used to be worried about Republicans engaging in violence, going on out there with our evil guns and shooting people, now they're starting to realize they should be more worried about the liberal Democrats between the shooting of the Republican congressman and groups like BAM and Antifa out there committing acts of violence. The Democrats are turning themselves into a fringe party. So, now, interesting report coming out of the Profiling Project. This is an independent, nonpartisan group of forensic psychology graduate students at George Washington University. And they issued a report that said the reason that Seth Rich did not have his wallet and watch and cell phone removed is that he was most likely killed by a professional killer, a hired killer. Now, they did include there the possibility of a serial killer, somebody who was experienced in doing this and proficient because they got away with it. And, of course, in the corporate media, they're pushing that whole thing, serial killer, except there haven't been any serial killers operating in that neighborhood. So, obviously, here in the independent media, we're looking at the report where it says hired professional killer, and that certainly seems more in line with the idea that Seth Rich was, in fact, the DNC leaker and that he was killed for it. Now then, getting on back to last year's election, Donald Trump came on out and said that he probably won the popular vote if it wasn't for all the dead voters and the illegal voters and all the massive electronic vote fraud going on. Now, two of those we still don't have any final word on, but apparently somebody completed a study of the 2008 election and revealed that 5.7 million illegal immigrants voted in 2008. And if the same number or larger voted in last year's election, then Donald Trump won that popular vote. And hopefully the Hillary people will just shut the heck up, finally, because we're getting sick and tired of listening to them. Now, as you know, there's been all this talk about finding a reason to impeach Donald Trump. It's obstruction of justice. It's this. It's that. They're talking about impeaching him for firing the FBI director, even though the president does have the authority to fire any member of the government, and he doesn't have to explain why. But now they're starting to pull back from that one because it's finally settling on in. If they were to succeed in impeaching Donald Trump and removing him from the White House, it's not going to put Hillary Clinton in power. It's not going to put a progressive in there. It will be Vice President Mike Pence who takes over that Oval Office, and he could actually turn out to be even worse for the liberal agenda than Donald Trump is being. So they're starting to pull back from that whole impeachment idea right now. And hopefully they'll have the same common sense about a possible assassination attempt. You will get Mike Pence. Is that what you really want? Now, finally, the State Department is looking into Hillary Clinton's mishandling of classified intelligence. They're still trying to make it sound like it was just a simple little mistake and a misunderstanding, but they're starting to ask why, when she is a private citizen now, does she still have her security clearance when it's supposed to be terminated as soon as she stopped being Secretary of State? And now they're talking about it may be time to revoke the security clearance from Hillary Clinton and members of her staff who still have their security clearances. Now, Hillary lobbied for the continuance of the security clearances on the claim that she was going to write a book about her experience as Secretary of State, and she needed access to documents. And it was a thin and flimsy excuse, because obviously anything that is classified cannot be copied into the book. But that was the excuse that she gave. And now State Department is saying, yeah, it may be time to yank that security clearance. Okay, we're going to take a phone call. Brendan in San Francisco, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Just an update on the Seth Rich. It was a serial killer, and the killer has been named. You may be familiar with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And the Clinton body count.
Yes.
She is a known serial killer, so that's been closed. Case closed there.
Well, you know, she never did the killing herself. I mean, she had people, and Bill Clinton had other people do it for them. Larry Nichols has admitted he killed people on behalf of the Clintons in Arkansas.
Right. Hey, Mike, on a lighter note, I was taking a flight from Palm Springs to San Francisco, and it was heading on to Seattle. And once we landed, the captain announced that there was an issue with the plane and that all the people going up to Seattle would have to deplane. And there was a bit of a moan on the plane. And I immediately shouted out that the Russians had done it and Putin was responsible. And the whole plane erupted in laughter that was supportive that this whole Russian narrative is a complete farce, and I felt relieved because I thought I would get heckled or jeered. But I'm telling you, man, the people are waking up, and that was proof positive to me.
Yeah, people are aware. I mean, we talk to people around our community, our neighbors. They may not be up on all the fine details, but they understand something has gone horribly wrong with the United States government, that we are in this period of very intense risk of a global war, which is very concerning to those of us who live on Oahu, because we're a target. I'll just always be throwing out these comments to, store clerks and anything like that, just to sort of take the measure of public awareness of what's going on. And the people who come back with a blank stare are decidedly in the minority.
Yeah, I get a false sense of what's happening here. Once you get outside the Bay Area, you only have to travel 20 minutes and the demographics change. It's hard to read people here, but anyway, thanks again, Mike, and have a great show.
All right, thanks an awful lot. I think we're coming up on a time where people are going to realize that they are not being polite or patriotic to remain silent. I certainly support that. It's time for Americans to speak out about what they see going on with their country. Paul Craig Roberts, we're going to be talking about him in a little bit in the show, had an article where he pulls no punches about what the U.S. government is doing. And, of course, we don't pull any punches either over here. Now, people are starting to take a closer look at John McCain's foundation, the McCain Institute for international something or other, which is attached to the University of Arizona. And apparently at the end of his attempt to run for the White House, he transferred something like $9 million of the funds from his failed political campaign to this foundation. But a lot of people who have been studying the Clinton Foundation are now looking at McCain's Institute and realizing that it's a lot of the same donors. George Soros, Teneo, Saudi Arabia, and they're starting to ask the question, are these foundations being run by politicians? Are they crooked? Are they just money laundry, slush fund, pay to play? And certainly McCain is in a position to sell influence still, at least within the Congress. And so there's something there that needs to be looked at. Now, over in the Senate, they're talking about having the draft of the Senate's version of the new Trump care health care bill in the next couple of days. The concern a lot of people have is just how secretive the senators have been about this. And it sort of reminds me of all the way back when Obamacare was being rammed through Congress, where Nancy Pelosi said, we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it, which was a dead giveaway that Obamacare was all about enriching the health insurance corporations at the expense of ordinary Americans. And a lot of people, when remember when Obama said, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan, and then it turned out, no. You had to buy one of these Obamacare-compliant policies that were much more expensive with sky-high deductibles, and a lot of people got into serious financial difficulty because of Obamacare. And now the concern is that the Republican Congress is still pandering to corporate interests, and they're going to come out with a new Trump care bill, which is going to be very, very similar to Obamacare, all about grabbing money away from the people and giving it to corporations who then kick it back as campaign donations next election. Now, looking over at Qatar and this attempt to isolate them, which seems to be floundering, and it all goes back to a single incident where there was a story that appeared in the Qatar media, which angered the Arab neighbors and triggered this whole situation in the first place. And of course, CNN was out there saying, well, you know, Russia obviously hacked the Qatar media to plant this story to sow discord. But Qatar's attorney general has said their internal investigation is saying it was one of their Arab neighbor states that was responsible for the hacking of Qatar's state news agency, and it wasn't the Russians. So, Brazil is going through a political crisis down there. Police say they have evidence President Temer received bribes, so there may be a big stink brewing down there. Yeah, politicians are corrupt. Imagine our shock here on this one. Okay, so let's talk about the war zones, emphasis on the plural. Every day comes along, seems like there's another war someplace out there. Government forces have launched a large advance in Daraa, and they're pushing forward there. And again, yesterday we put up these two comparison maps of the Syrian war situation from March versus today. And very obviously, the Syrian government forces and their allies are making tremendous headway. Now, there was a report a little while ago that head of the of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, had been killed in an airstrike, and apparently Russia is now saying they can confirm that, because apparently the Russian Air Force hit a command post, and more than 30 field commanders were killed, including Baghdadi. And that means, well, it's a decap strike. That means that the anti-government forces operating inside Syria don't really have a working chain of command at the moment. I'm sure they're rushing to put one together, but at the moment they really don't hear. Now, very troubling article here, U.S. aggression in Syria testing Russia's resolve. And it starts out talking about how yesterday, for the fifth time in recent weeks, U.S. warplanes attacked Syrian military targets. These are obviously acts of aggression. This has nothing to do with the war on terror and ISIS and al-Qaeda. This is the U.S. making war on Syria without, I should point out, a congressional declaration of war or a resolution from the United Nations Security Council. All of this is illegal. And Washington, D.C. is still out there trying to insist they're not really fighting Syria, and they're just there to get ISIS and al-Qaeda. But the gap between what Washington, D.C. is saying and what they're doing is growing by leaps and bounds. We'll be back after these commercials. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to take a phone call here from Wes in Idaho. Aloha, Wes. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Wes, are you there? Going once? Going twice? Okay, I guess he's not there. As you know, following the shoot down of the Syrian Sukhoi 22. Russia has effectively declared a no-fly zone over Syria west of the Euphrates, the area where Russia is operating. And the U.S. response is rather strange. They're saying that U.S. pilots over Syria will defend themselves if attacked by the Russians. Now, this is kind of absurd to say they're defending themselves when they are, in fact, an outside invader. If you invade somebody else's country, part of that job description is they're going to shoot at you. And when you shoot back, it is not defending yourself. It is invasion. It is an attempt at conquest. It is war. Syria has been defending itself against U.S. machinations to kick out Bashar al-Assad and put in a U.S. puppet ruler for 5 years now. But it is rather amazing, not to mention arrogant, to claim that all of this is defending themselves. The United States government does not have a declaration of war against Syria from the Congress. It does not have a United Nations Security Council resolution. The government of Syria has not given the United States permission to be on their soil or fly in their airspace. Nobody wants them there. This is just the United States government's imperial hubris. In an earlier age, they called it manifest destiny. This idea that it was the destiny of the United States to rule the world. We know who the aggressor is in this rush to a new world war. And it's not Syria, and it's not Iran, and it's not Russia. Certainly wasn't Afghanistan, it wasn't Iraq, wasn't Libya, wasn't Yemen. It's the United States and their allies trying to make the world safe for Federal Reserve notes. Okay, did we get Wes back in Idaho? Is he on the line? Wes, are you there? There you are.
Hello?
Yes, Wes, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Right now, CIA has declassified here recently that it, for 20 years it used reverse speech in analyzing of people's voices. David Oates should be given a Nobel Prize for science. He should be given $1 million. He's been at it for 34 years, and it could be used for therapy as well as investigation. It's quite interesting to listen
Let me insert something here, because somebody else sent me this story. And it frankly feels a little bit bogus. Now, I know the CIA has been involved in voice stress analyzers, and the ones the CIA use are really very, very good. I've seen those actually in action. Back in the 1970s, the U.S. government had this classified report that said they had succeeded in sending messages from a base on shore to a submerged submarine way out at sea using telepathy. And this report somehow found its way into the hands of the Soviets, who were panicked at the psychic gap, if you will, and they spent huge amounts of time and millions of rubles trying to duplicate this feat. And then later on it came on out that this was a complete hoax by the CIA in order to get the Soviet Union to waste money on something that could never really work. And this, to be very honest, sounds a little bit more like the same of that. Anyway, Wes, we're coming up on a commercial break, and so I'm going to let you go here with this. And we're going to start with James in South Carolina, but I'll probably have to take you through the commercial break. What's on your mind?
I got a question about silver. They keep pushing it down, apparently using paper silver.
Yes, they do that to gold as well.
Well, my question is, they seem to have been doing this for a long time, and given the fact that silver is used as an industrial metal, it would seem to me that either there's much more silver around, or there's not as much demand for silver as people think, because you can't keep it pushed down if it's actually being used, it doesn't seem, for as long as they've
James,
done this.
James, I got to put you on hold. We got to take a break for commercials. I'll answer your question when you come back. America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking with James in South Carolina about silver. And, yes, silver does have some industrial applications. So does gold. But the main industrial use of silver was film emulsions. And following everyone's transition to digital photography, demand for silver for film emulsions, you know, vanished, basically. And so I don't know that the demand for silver for industrial use is all that high anymore. But obviously, if they can keep the silver prices down, then industrial users are enjoying low prices and higher profits.
Well, that's a very good answer.
Okay.
Is it not used a lot, though, in electronics?
Not that much because of the tendency to tarnish. It is used in some high-end electronics. It's used a lot in the wiring for weapons. I think a Tomahawk cruise missile has a couple of kilograms of silver in its wiring. But that's not the sort of thing ordinary consumers are going to be using. So, again, I don't think there's that much of it, as opposed to, for example, the gold that's used in the circuit tracings on certain circuit boards. But I think the other side of the coin is there may actually be more silver out there than people think. And a big question would be looking at the volume of production from the various silver mines around the world and see how much is still coming out of the ground, because there's a lot of silver down there.
Well, wouldn't it be possible if the powers that be can create money anytime they want to, and it doesn't cost them anything to create money, couldn't they go out and start silver mines and diamond and gold mines anytime they wanted to?
Well,
dig all the gold and dig all the silver they want?
They could, but our financial system doesn't want to have a commodity base attached to it because that limits their ability to create money out of thin air. And that, of course, is when our economy really started to deteriorate, when the gold and silver were delinked from it, so that the paper currency just floats freely. And so people want gold and silver as a wealth preservation. But in most states, the buying and selling of it is still subject to capital gains tax, which limits your ability to actually make money with it. Now, some states are starting to reverse that. They're starting to say there is no capital gains tax, and in effect, they're now making silver and gold coins legal tender again, which is good because that is a form of currency or money that is not accruing interest to the private central bank when you use it.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to switch over to Tony in Puerto Rico. Aloha, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Mike. Aloha. Listen, Mike, I just want to make a quick comment. I know there's a lot of people waiting. My comment is that my question is this. If Jim Garrison would have won the case against Clay Shaw, would have had him convicted, you think the government would have fallen at that time?
I don't know if it would have, but of course, Jim Garrison's case was sabotaged by a bogus witness that they planted on him, and Clay Shaw died under mysterious circumstances soon after the acquittal. So the CIA is very rough with liabilities, as it were.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks an awful lot. We're going to let you go. By the way, a little piece of trivia not a lot of people know. In Oliver Stone's film JFK, the real Jim Garrison plays the role of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren. That's the real Jim Garrison there. All righty, getting on back to Syria, there is all of a sudden an outbreak of polio paralysis. And so far it's hit 17 children in Mayadin and Raqqa, and they're calling it acute flaccid paralysis. But apparently lab tests have confirmed the children had vaccine-derived polio, not the wild version. Now, here in the United States, there's a tremendous amount of pressure to avoid that phrase, vaccine-derived polio. They've got another euphemism for it, a polio-like paralysis of an unspecified kind. But again, we have another example of these vaccines actually causing the illnesses that we're told they will prevent. Now, Germany has left the Incirclic air base. They're moving their planes out over to a new base in Jordan. Turkey is now marching on the Kurds. And so the whole Turkey's a wild card. They're the loose cannon on deck here. There's been another incident involving U.S. and Russian aircraft, and in this particular case, apparently an F-16 flew very close to an aircraft carrying the Russian defense minister. Video taken from the defense minister's aircraft shows the F-16 was right up there on its wing, and a Sukhoi 27 came alongside. Then it did a little slight bit of a roll to show the fact that it was carrying live weapons on the wing pylons, and the F-16 took off. But again, this is a provocation on the side of the United States. Apparently, Connecticut Democrat Senator Chris Murphy is actually saying that the U.S. is moving toward military conflict with Iran and Russia directly. Forget about this pretense that we're all in Syria and everything. This senator is very concerned that we are headed to war with Russia and Iran. And that's something that we ought not to be very thrilled with. Now, of course, Russia has already signaled that they will come to Iran's defense if it's attacked. And Putin has already said his strategy, if Russia and the U.S. get into a war, is to simply fight a war of attrition, wear the United States down until they have to quit, like happened in Vietnam. And with our nation in the current economic condition that it's in, with the current drawdown on all the strategic stockpiles, with weapons that have just been worn out from 15 years of war, it wouldn't take that much to do. And that really would be the best strategy for Putin to be following here. Another article out of Sputnik News, NATO's buildup pushes situation at the Russian border toward deterioration. Now, as you know, all these NATO troops and forces and weapons and everything are going over to the Russia border to contain Russian aggression. And so far, Russia hasn't aggressed against anybody. It's NATO aggression. And the situation is rapidly reaching a danger point where one hothead, one mistake, will start the conflict for real. Now, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is saying that the U.S. government appears to be obsessed with Russophobia, and it's gone beyond all bounds. No matter what happens, Russia's to blame. Waxy yellow buildup, Russia's to blame. Socks are missing from the dryer, Russia's to blame. Qatar's news media hacked, oh, it had to be Russia. John loses his election in Georgia, Russia had to hack the election, and just on and on and on. What's really interesting, and you have to wonder what they're smoking there over at the State Department. The State Department has issued a statement on U.S.-Russian relations saying that they regret Russia has decided to turn away from an opportunity to discuss bilateral obstacles which hinder U.S.-Russian relations. Excuse me, who sanctioned who? Talk about hypocrisy. Does the State Department, does the U.S. government actually think the American people are falling for this? Maybe their advisors, their staffers are telling them this to keep their phony, baloney, high-paying jobs. Oh, yes, the American people are believing it. The American people believe Russia's the aggressor. The American people believe Assad is bad and gassing his own people. Really, they are believing that. I don't think so. I see the higher levels of the U.S. government are dangerously out of touch with what ordinary Americans are thinking and feeling right now. I mean, just the result of these elections yesterday in South Carolina and Georgia, clearly the Democratic leadership was taken by surprise. They're still caught up in their magical thinking and groupthink, and they're convinced that they're still in control of things. The corporate media is still convinced they're controlling what the American people think. And I think that's not the case anymore. Now, as you know, the Senate passed that Russian sanctions bill, and big surprise, the House Republicans are now blocking it. Now, they're not doing it out of a sense that war with Russia is a bad idea, or that they're friendly with Putin and Russia, but they're making a big stink over the origination clause in the Constitution. which requires legislation that raises revenue, which sanctions are going to do, to originate in the House. Now, they didn't care about that when they got TARP through there, the Troubled Asset Relief Program following the 2008 mortgage-backed security fraud meltdown. The House had a bill. It failed. They couldn't vote it through. Then the Senate passed their own version and sent it back to the House. That was also a violation of the origination clause. But as long as we save Wall Street, we can bend the rules a little tiny bit. Now, as you know, Donald Trump and Petro Poroshenko had a meeting, and Poroshenko was saying in the aftermath he had very effective negotiations with Donald Trump on supplying Ukraine with defensive weapons. Now, when you're talking about a land battle in a small area, the line between what is an offensive weapon and a defensive weapon really gets kind of blurred. But they're putting that on out there because Poroshenko is still trying to look like he's the victim, and Crimea and those eastern Ukrainian republics are the bad people for not wanting him as their boss any longer here. Down in Israel, they're making a big stink over Iran's strike on ISIS inside Syria. And the Jerusalem Post had this hysterical article out there. And I don't mean hysterical funny. I mean hysterical, like screaming panic, saying the Iran missile struck ISIS, but they could also aim it at the United States and the Saudis and Israel. Now, first of all, Iran does not have any rocket that could hit the United States of America. And Iran was coordinating with Damascus to carry out this strike in response to the terror attacks in Tehran. So it's a little bit of exaggeration on the part of the Jerusalem Post. And apparently former Deputy Defense Minister Ephraim Sneh is now saying that if Hezbollah in Lebanon fires rockets on Israel, Israel should target Iran's infrastructure, because they're all in cahoots against us. They're all anti-Semites. So they're just looking for an excuse to start the war with Iran here. Meanwhile, Iran is repeating their observation, and there's merit to it, that the U.S. created Daesh, ISIS, ISIL. And Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, called the U.S. the source of instability in the Middle East, and that's absolutely right. If the U.S. was minding their own business, taking care of this country, instead of sticking their nose in all over the world, the Middle East would be peaceful. Israel would still be kicking up a fuss. But without U.S. backing, Israel would have to back off and say, we really can't beat all these other nations all by ourselves. Unless they use the nukes. And that would have political costs that I'm sure they don't want to deal with right now. So another story here is there's been a bit of a dust-up in the Saudi royal family, where the expected heir to the throne, Mohammed bin Nayef, has been stripped of all of his titles. And apparently has been replaced with the son of the current king, Mohammed bin Salman. And everybody's in a bit of a panic because Mohammed bin Nayef was very pro-America, wanted to cooperate with Washington, D.C. Mohammed bin Salman, a little bit more of a wild card. So, again, more destabilization here. Trump is taking another step toward war with North Korea. He's basically declared that China has failed to force North Korea to accede to U.S. demands, opening the door for unilateral U.S. action, including military strikes. Now, remember, it was earlier in the week where Secretary of Defense Mattis was saying, we do not want to get into war in North Korea. Because you go back and you study how the Korean War began. A lot of people died on both sides, and it was never resolved. There's a ceasefire. But officially, the Korean War is still ongoing, and it could turn into another Vietnam very, very quickly and be another defeat for the United States. But Trump is out there pushing that. But then, surprisingly, North Korea has announced they're open to halting their nuclear and ICBM tests, declare a moratorium As long as South Korea and the United States stop holding all these saber-rattling military drills just off their coastline. Now, unfortunately, I don't think that one is going to fly. The U.S. government has basically learned some bad habits from the government of Israel, and their attitude is, you give us what we want first, and then maybe we'll do something nice for you. In any event, I'm expecting that the U.S. position on this is that North Korea has to surrender all of their nuclear weapons material and all of their ICBMs so that when the U.S. goes ahead with the invasion, North Korea will not be able to deter that invasion. Now, remember back in June, there was a drone that came over the border from North Korea to South Korea, and South Korea has now confirmed that, yes, it was a North Korean drone just peeking at things. I think it was a reckless and dumb move to do, but on the other hand, North Korea may have been wanting to make sure that there wasn't an invasion being prepped there. Meanwhile, Beijing is putting pressure on South Korea to make a decision on the terminal high-altitude area defense missile batteries, and basically whether they're just going to leave the two that are up there or whether they're going to allow the United States to install all the ones that they want over there. And again, the president of South Korea, Moon Jae-in, he wants to calm things down. He wants to meet with Kim Jong-un and say, let's not let all these outside countries come on in and wreck Korea again like they did the last time. Let's shake hands, reunify, and we'll turn the DMZ into a golf course for suicidal golfers. But again, it's all outside meddling here. Now, there's been a very strange development related to Otto Warmbier. Now, he's the student who got sent to prison in North Korea for stealing a poster, came home in a very strange medical condition, died at the hospital here. His parents have asked the coroner not to allow an autopsy, and the coroner has agreed. So any comments about the actual cause of death are going to be speculative at best. We'll be right back. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Now, down in the Philippines, apparently ISIS-linked militants stormed a school and have taken hostages. Wow, ISIS, what are they doing down there? Well, it's actually pretty easy to figure on out. Duterte cracks down on the drug trade. ISIS shows up, and the U.S. invades. And yes, there are U.S. Special Forces boots on the ground in the Philippines right now. They're going to replace him because he won't go along with the narcocracy. Under the claim of needing to contain Russia and China, the Pentagon is requesting more than $230 billion over the next 20 years to upgrade and modernize the nuclear forces. And apparently the concern driving this forward is that Russia's nuclear arsenal is larger than the American nuclear arsenal. And apparently it's estimated that between 1949 and 1991, the Soviet Union produced approximately 55,000 nuclear warheads. Now, some of those have been decommissioned in response to various treaties. And we know some of those warheads were demonstrator units like the Tsar bomb that are not intended for actual use. But something to keep in mind, if they're thinking about pushing a war with Russia, that's a lot of nuclear weapons. If this thing were to get uncorked, there's a nuclear weapon for every major city in the United States of America several times over. Now, updating and modernizing our nuclear arsenal may be a bit problematic because the Los Alamos National Laboratory is one of the few facilities that deals with plutonium, which is this man-made element. It is created in fission electrical power reactors, and it is a material used as a spark for U.S. thermonuclear multi-stage devices. But the lab has been closed since 2013 due to widespread safety concerns, and it's nowhere near being ready to reopen anytime soon. Meanwhile, over in Rocky Flats, another place where they made nuclear weapons with plutonium, it's a Superfund site, and they claim it's been cleaned up, but and now they're going to put a public park where all the plutonium used to be, and local residents are trying to sue to block this, saying that you can walk over the ground with a Geiger counter and it's still radioactive. And plutonium is an alpha emitter, and if you inhale just a little speck of it, it will go on radiating inside you. It's an engraved invitation to cancer and leukemia here. For some reason, the U.S. government has decided to allow the F-35s to resume flying, even though they have yet to figure out why the oxygen supply system keeps failing. I guess the pilots are just going to have to hold their breath if something goes wrong. All right, I'm going to take a break for station identification. We'll be right back. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're just now getting a story. Apparently over at in Texas at Ellington Airfield, an F-16 basically caught fire during takeoff. The plane crashed. The pilot ejected. He's in the hospital right now, and they're dealing with the fire. And it's another reminder that for all the cost involved, U.S. weapons really aren't very good at all, are they? All right, we're going to take a phone call here. Karen in Maryland, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, for anybody who's hesitant to call in, I can just give you the good referral that you don't spend a half an hour on hold like you do with other radio shows if anybody is discouraged for calling in for that reason. But anyway, I'll get on with it. The first question concerns political action committees. So since Hawaii is still a part of the U.S., I'll ask you this. Not necessarily what do you know about the LaRouche Pack. I presume that you have heard of the LaRouche Pack.
Yes, I have.
So my question is, in your opinion, is the LaRouche Pack closely modeled after the principles, agenda, and goals of the Constitution Party, or do you not consider the two of them similar at all?
The truth is, I don't know enough about either LaRouche Pack or the Constitution Party to have an opinion on that. I haven't been paying a lot of attention. I've only read a few of LaRouche's commentaries, and I'm completely unfamiliar with the Constitution Party.
Okay, so you wouldn't say then you're not qualified to make an opinion as to whether or not, like, if the Constitution Party existed in the form of a pack, it would be the LaRouche Pack.
Yeah, that's an accurate way of describing it, okay?
Okay, and the next question is about debit cards, D-E-B-I-T debit cards, like the ones that you stick into the ATM and so forth. I doubt that this is the case, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you anyway. When you pay with a debit card, not when you use it at the ATM, but when you actually pay with a debit card, does the transaction, does the amount that is taken out of your account, does that actually attach to any physical Federal Reserve notes, or is it completely an electronic transaction?
Completely electronic. Completely electronic.
Okay, so there do not have to be any Federal Reserve notes in reserve in order to cover that.
No. In fact, if you look at the total volume of currency in the U.S. economy, the physical paper and ink is actually a very, very small fraction. And of course, they're trying to basically wean us away from that as well. But we've had too many of these stories of these ATMs and debit card machines at the stores breaking down and literally locking people away from being able to buy food for their families. So I think there's going to be a real pushback against this idea of a cash-free society.
Okay, so in order to attach the Federal Reserve notes to the debit card, you physically have to withdraw it out of the ATM.
Yeah. If you withdraw it out of the ATM, then you have the physical cash in your hand.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Good show as always. Thank
Alrighty.
You. Bye.
And I'm typing something to our control person. There we go. All right, we got it. Now then, over in Germany, the U.S. has a military base at Mannheim that was actually scheduled to be closed. But because of this new build-up to a new world war, The Pentagon is now saying, we'd like to hang on to it. They're negotiating to extend its lease and keep it going. Now, down in Venezuela, as you know, they are in serious economic trouble down there. The U.S. has been carrying out covert war on Venezuela going all the way back to the time of Hugo Chavez, in part because Hugo Chavez had a bad habit of selling Venezuela's oil for the yuan, and then even worse than that, he would spend that oil revenue on the Venezuelan people, and that just sets a bad example for the serfs around the world. And there's been a lot of economic warfare, not to mention the lingering effects of that poorly thought out oil price war against Russia. That really put Venezuela into a serious position. And now the U.S. is out there talking about, well, maybe the U.S. should go on in and mediate the crisis between the government we would like to kick out and the new government we would like to put on in. And Venezuela's foreign minister is saying any attempt by the U.S. To go into Venezuela will be met with all available force. Sort of reminds me of that scene out of Avatar when our protagonist is meeting his commander and the commander's in the weight room. Said, I read your record, Venezuela, that was some mean Bush. It's a reminder of just how James Cameron can be very, very prescient at times. We're going to do a shout-out now to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining the network. Over at the United Nations, little bit of a dust-up over there, because generally senior UN posts are held by those member nations that have the permanent veto on the Security Council. United States, Britain, France, and China tend to dominate, but UN Chief Antonio Guterres is now going to appoint a Moscow envoy in Vienna to head a newly created UN Office of Counterterrorism. So now Russia is going to have influence over the United Nations policy in dealing with terror. And we know where this is coming from. If you're going to fight the terrorists, fight the terrorists. Don't go into Syria, say that you're fighting the terrorists, and actually fight Syria. So Guterres went out on a limb for this one, and I think it was the right thing to do here. Now, we have been talking about this four-part series that History Channel put together, America's War on Drugs. It's airing now, and you can actually watch the episodes over at the History Channel itself. Three have aired. The fourth one is going to come on, and they're stripping it. They're running it over and over and over again. And I just watched episode two, which is titled Cocaine, Cartels, and Crackdowns. And I have to say, somebody at the History Channel has gonads of solid granite. It took a lot of courage to put this information out there into the public eye. And this episode goes into the CIA arming of the Contras after the Boland Amendment and the funding of the operation by smuggling drugs into the United States, into Arkansas, under then-Governor Bill Clinton. They have these former CIA agents saying that, yeah, we all had problems with this, but the orders were coming from higher up. And one of the best parts of the show is this DEA agent who was trying to basically shut the smuggling down, and his superiors kept telling him, no, that's a protected operation. They're working for Felix Rodriguez and so forth. And apparently this DEA agent actually got to meet Vice President George Herbert Walker Bush at a function at the embassy and put him on the spot. I think the CIA is running drugs. And Bush just laughed at him and walked away. And even if you do not watch the other episodes of this well-produced miniseries, watch this one. It flows along. It's very well edited, very good production values. Now, they use as much historical footage as they can, but obviously when you're talking about CIA and covert operations and drug running, there are not a lot of cameras around. So there's a little bit of dramatization, but it fits in very, very nicely. It's really a very good job. And, of course, for those of us who've been following on the crimes of MENA, going all the way back to the 1980s in Arkansas, this is a vindication to see all the stuff we have been talking about, you know, out there on the corporate media. They even mentioned the airport at MENA, Arkansas. and they showed Barry Seal and how he was flying guns for the CIA and flying drugs. And it's an eye-opener, and I recommend it highly, and I recommend that you grab it off the History Channel website and you send it to everybody that you know. Because this stuff really did happen. We weren't making it up. Think of all those years that we were called conspiracy theorists and, oh, our government would never do anything like that. Here it is. It's all out there by the people who were there who saw it happen. Now, they didn't go into all the details. They didn't go into the circumstances under which Barry Seal was finally killed. They didn't go into the train deaths. They certainly did not go anywhere near the money laundry, but they did obliquely mention that in Arkansas, law enforcement was being kept away from the CIA's drug and gun running operation. They don't mention who was responsible, but in the state government, who's got that kind of juice to tell the cops and the drug investigators stay away? So it's a very, very good show, and that episode... unless there's something really surprising in the fourth one, that's my favorite episode. I recommend it highly. In fact, that's your homework. It's going to be a pop quiz tomorrow, so study up on this one. Getting into the economic news, Japan is now considering joining China's One Belt, One Road project, an initiative. And basically, it shows that Japan's posture toward China is now relaxing. They're thinking about going back to being friends, peace through commerce. And Abe said Japan was ready to cooperate with OBOR under certain conditions. And obviously here in the United States of America, Wall Street and the government are very concerned because if China can make this work, China will be positioned as a regional leader, displacing the United States' control over that part of Asia. And I think they'll do it. It's very obvious the United States is an empire in decline. They've got all the symptoms. Got all the symptoms. Ford is now shifting production of the Ford Focus to China, moving out of Michigan and Mexico, supposedly to cut costs. I thought Ford was one of the companies that agreed with Donald Trump that we had to bring the jobs back here to the United States. Now, we've been talking about the pension crisis. It's all over the country. It's ultimately going to affect everyone. General Electric's pension is billions and billions in the hole. And now we're getting word that the Teamsters' private pension is hovering at the edge of bankruptcy, and some 407,000 retirees may be left with virtually nothing. Right now, the Teamsters pension is paying out $3 for every $1 it takes in. Obviously, that is not sustainable. Bitcoin is back. India has legalized cryptocurrencies, and that reignited interest and demand in Bitcoin. It's back up above $2,700. Here's a very telling statistic. 69% of Americans do not have an adequate emergency fund. You've always heard the phrase, save for a rainy day, you got to have something in case something goes wrong. And most Americans don't have that. They're just barely paying their bills month after month after month. They're barely putting food on the table. We have been impoverished by Wall Street greed and the war machine. There's nothing left out here. Been a new development in the Grenfell Tower disaster. As you know, earlier in the week we were talking about how these survivors had lost their identity cards. Either they lost them in the fire. Apparently some of the residents in this tower were refugees who had not yet received their papers. But apparently residents who survived the Grenfell Tower fire and do not have a home are going to be moved to 68 luxury flats in nearby Kensington Row, which is a very upscale area where private apartments in this luxury block can go for £1.5 million. I'm sure it's going to be a tremendous improvement. Meanwhile, the numbers are just not adding up. with the official claim of only 79 dead, and there are accusations of a cover-up. The building housed 600 people, and looking at the number who appear to have survived and went to the hospital or didn't go to the hospital or were relocated, the numbers don't add up. I think the death toll was a lot higher. Okay, Germany says 100 million African refugees could head north. The German Development Minister Gerd Müller is saying that these refugees are heading to Europe as economic and climate refugees. That's the new term. They're climate refugees. They're escaping global warming. Actually, we're going into an ice age. If you're a climate refugee, you want to be heading toward the equator. But it is amazing how they're still pushing that agenda. Now, as you know, a lot of the European Union member states are digging in their heels on this refugee problem. It's caused all kinds of difficulty. It has strained their social safety nets, huge financial losses, increase in crime, rape, robbery, burglary, violence directed between various religious groups, no-go zones, and they're really kind of getting fed up with that. So apparently defense officials of six Central European countries and the Balkans are now pledging close cooperation in tackling migration with all possible means, including use of armed forces. Austria, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, and Slovenia have created a grouping called the Central European Defense Cooperation that they are proposing as a role model for the entire European Union. And one of the agendas they have there is that anybody who wants to apply for asylum in European Union countries have to do it outside the European Union. You don't just get to walk on in and then file the paperwork. You file the paperwork first, and somebody will make a decision whether you can come in or not. And unfortunately, the refugees are really causing a huge amount of damage to their own cause by their behavior. And apparently, the deputy leader of Britain First, Jada Franson, a few of her colleagues decided to take a stroll down the street in Bury Park, which is now a primarily Muslim district of the city, to see how Muslims reacted to the wearing of a cross. And needless to say, they reacted very badly and basically screamed that Christians need to understand Muslims have now taken over the entire country. Now, over on YouTube, they put up this video, More Than a Refugee, which is a pro-open border puff piece, and it did not do well at all. As of the last time we checked, it had accumulated over 132,000 downvotes versus 54,000 upvotes. So people are definitely chilling on this idea of open borders and blending everybody together. Been another accident over in the French port of Calais. Apparently, migrants set up a roadblock. And the reason they do that is they try and get the trucks to slow down enough where they can climb on board and get a ride through that channel tunnel. And the truck drivers, because there have been robberies, don't want to stop for them. And so apparently these migrants literally put three tree trunks across the roadway, and this van hit it, and the driver has died. Apparently over in London's North End, Stamford Hill, there's been a fight between Hasidic Jews and Muslims. And the riot police had to respond. Things got really, really nasty. Over in Hungary, they're making it very clear they want a new border policy. They have a brand new electrified border wall with watchtowers and guards with machine guns. They are being very, very serious about all of this. They want to control who comes into their country. And that's a natural right of any country. This idea that there shouldn't be borders, it's nonsense. You have a right to decide and choose who gets in, who does not. You certainly don't want criminals coming in. You do not want people carrying contagious diseases coming on in. We're going to take a break for commercials, and we'll be right back. Hello, hi, America. Welcome back to our show here. Another example of military snafu. Apparently, the Pentagon shelled out $30 million for Afghan Army uniforms that were the wrong color. And apparently, the guy in charge of getting the uniforms saw this very colorful camouflage pattern that he liked while he was browsing on the Internet and said, I think we're going to get that. And he ordered the uniforms with this woodland, urban, and temperate patterns, despite Afghanistan being about 95% desert. And then they wonder why the American people are saying the Pentagon has enough money to play with here. And don't forget all those trillions that they simply misplaced. They simply just misplaced. All right, getting on back here to the European Union. The former president of the Czechoslovakian Republic, Klaus, is saying we will not let the European Union transformed the Czech Republic into a multicultural society. Everybody is digging their heels in on this one. This could actually break up the EU. I used to think it was going to be the extreme poverty and hardship caused by the European Central Bank that would break up the Union. But this refugee crisis, Brussels is threatening sanctions, and these other countries are threatening back. Meanwhile, up in Germany, the country's commissioner for refugee integration, Aidan Özgür, I hope I pronounced that correctly, is saying that three-quarters of the refugees in Germany will still be out of a job in 5 years' time. That means three-quarters of the refugees now in Germany will be living off the German taxpayer for the next 5 years. And I'm sure the German taxpayers are not happy about that, because they're already picking up the cost for a lot of the other European Union nations that are not doing as well as Germany. Meanwhile, Starbucks has announced that in its European stores, they're going to hire 2,500 refugees to promote jobs for refugees, so forth and so on. It didn't work out here in the U.S. Remember when Starbucks announced they were going to hire refugees over indigenous Americans or over unemployed veterans, and everybody just boycotted Starbucks, and they're still pushing this agenda out there. Now, getting on over to Paris, there was a recent case where this man rammed a car into a police van in Paris. It turns out this guy was on a French watch list, and despite that, he had a cache of weapons at his home, and he held a gun permit, despite being on the list of people linked to radical Islam. It sort of makes you wonder, was this guy somebody's asset? Was he a patsy? Or are all these lists just worthless? Story that came out of WorldNet Daily, and it's a very telling one. It's basically a first-person experience coming out of the city of Utica, and how it was literally flooded by Muslim refugees who basically just came on in, and there was a conversion of a Methodist church into a mosque, and all of a sudden they're seeing these refugees who are not yet legal citizens are somehow able to get into positions of power and authority. The social worker at the school is Muslim, the administrator who okays homeschooling is Muslim, CPS worker is Muslim, the nurse practitioner at the ER is Muslim, the doctor at the ER is Muslim. These are positions that hold a wheel of power. And basically she's saying the city of Utica is gone. It's been erased by the flood of refugees. And, of course, that's what the globalists like George Soros want. They want to erase our cultural, regional identity. They want to erase the borders. And that's why there are all these attacks on things like the Confederate flag and the statues and all the rest of it. They're trying to erase our memory of who we are and where we came from. Because people with a strong sense of identity, strong sense of self, are much more difficult to control. They even want you confused over which bathroom you got to use. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back. And hello, Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And right now I'm watching the press conference over this morning's stabbing attack on an officer at the airport in Flint, Michigan. And apparently the attacker was shouting Aloha Snack Bar. It turns out he's a Canadian citizen, they are saying that, yes, this was an act of terrorism. So a lot of craziness going on here. Okay, let's get on back to the news. As you're probably aware, a lot of states are trying to pass laws that restrict the public's access to police body cameras. I mean, if the body cam footage supports the police officer, of course it will be made public. If it does not support the police officer's version, then they can rely on these laws to say you're not allowed to look at it. Pennsylvania just went the other way. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court has ruled police dash cam videos are public records and must be released under the state's right to know law. And there does need to be some accountability and transparency because of some of the situations where things get out of control. I mean, there was that video. This officer pulls over a guy because his brake lights aren't working. The driver informs the officer he's got a gun. And all of a sudden, the officer just hauls off and shoots him. And by the way, the driver did have a permit for carrying the gun. He was in full compliance with the law. And the officer's out there saying, I feared for my life. I feared for my life. I want to know what prescription antidepressants that cop was on. Meanwhile, in response to the Columbine incident some years ago, Colorado has decided they are going to arm and train their teachers in classrooms. They're going to have all the teachers take a gun safety course and regular trips to the shooting range to maintain proficiency in order to discourage anybody from trying to repeat what happened back in 2012. I think that's actually a very good idea. It's going to it is going to deter people from doing something like that. Any one of these mass shootings you look at, where do they go? The gun-free zones. So let's get rid of the gun-free zones. The other benefit is it's going to demystify guns for the students. Now, up until now, we've had all these efforts to say guns are bad, guns are evil, and if they just see their teachers just wearing them on the belt, then it's just another tool. It's just another tool. And again, I come from an age where you were allowed to take your guns to school because you were going to varmint the farm fields when you walked home from school that day. Schools actually had shooting clubs. Schools would teach gun safety. We need to go back to that. We never had to deal with mass shootings or any craziness like that. Of course, we also didn't have those prescription antidepressants. In all the years I lived in that town, there was only one bad incident with a gun, and that appeared to have been a botched attempt at suicide. Now, getting on to computers and various other things like that, apparently the Supreme Court has declared that political correctness is not a guide for the Patent and Trademark Office. We mentioned this before, where there was this band that had a band name called the Slants, and they're Asian kids, and they wanted to trademark that, and the Patent and Trademark Office said, no, it's politically incorrect. It's politically incorrect. And the Supreme Court said, no, if somebody registers a trademark, you have to give it to them. It is free speech to come up with a brand name. Everybody's too sensitive. Everybody's been taught that being offended by every little thing is now socially acceptable. Grow a skin. Buy a helmet. There are way too many people in our society whose entire sense of self-worth is always finding something to be offended by, and if you give these people free rein, you're always going to have somebody screaming at you, that offends me, that offends me, that offends me. Okay, be offended. I don't care. Apple's come out with what I think is a really good idea. They want programming added to the school curriculum. Apparently, Apple CEO Tim Cook told President Trump during their little tech giant meeting that Trump should consider making computer coding classes mandatory for schools. We live in an age of computers. The more you know how to work with them, the more effective you will be. A lot of user applications actually have coding languages built into them to extend their capabilities. I'll give you a good example. A music software package Claire uses for her choirs called Sonar. And it has an internal programming language called Cal. And many times we can get Sonar to do things the original creators never imagined by writing Cal scripts for it. I do the writing of the Cal scripts. But yeah, it's a good idea. Plus it's a useful skill. Kids are going to be able to get jobs with that. Now there's another Supreme Court decision regarding the internet, and it's caused a lot of controversy, but again, as a supporter of the Bill of Rights, I have to agree with them. And basically the Supreme Court ruled in this case that you cannot ban people from the internet, no matter what they've done. Now in this case, it was a very contentious situation where somebody carried out sex crimes against a minor, that were lured and encouraged over the internet, sort of like what Anthony Weiner was doing, sexting the underage girl. Now, obviously, that's bad behavior, and you want to deal with the bad behavior. But the Supreme Court said you can't be banned blanket from the internet, no matter what they've done. So I can see one possible exception to that, and that would be in the case of people who commit computer crime. Banning them from the internet, just the way a convicted felon is prohibited from owning a gun. Meanwhile, the WannaCry virus is back. It's infected a Honda factory near Tokyo. They had to shut it down for over 24 hours while their computers were rebooted and restored from backup. And apparently computer systems in several plants around the world were affected by the WannaCry virus as well. And they had to halt production in Sayama, Japan. So, and again, where is the NSA and the FBI and the CIA on all this cybercrime that's going on? They're too busy spying on law-abiding Americans. The real criminals have got free rein here. John McAfee is out there saying basically every router in America has been compromised by the three-letter agencies. And again, all of these back doors are being discovered by the cyber criminals. In basically violating our Fourth Amendment right to privacy in the name of fighting crime and terror, the three-letter agencies have left us wide open to all kinds of criminal activity. We're vulnerable. We're not protected. And the government isn't doing anything about the cybercrime. And we proved with our NSA encryption challenge that real criminals and real terrorists can quite easily come up with methods of encryption that the NSA cannot break because they don't have the method. So, what a vile place this has become. Let's see. I wanted to do this. There he is. Paul Craig Roberts came out with this article, Another Step Toward Devastating War. And basically, I love the last line of the article. Paul Craig Roberts, we've had him on the show here. Putin, the leader of the free world, should not be on the defensive from a bankrupt, two-bit punk, washed-up government in Washington that wallows in evil. I think that really does say it all. We, the American people, need to stand up and take an honest assessment of the denizens of Washington, D.C., that swamp, and realize they are not good people. They are corrupt beyond redemption. Now, seismologists, volcanologists, if you will, are a little bit concerned because there has been a swarm of very small earthquakes in Yellowstone Park, northwest of the lake. And by the way, we had an earthquake here just when the show was starting down on the Big Island, and we felt that. But there have been more than 460 of these earthquakes recorded so far. And their largest quake was a magnitude 4.4. They felt that one. Most of them are magnitude 2, magnitude 1, and a lot of the seismic maps won't even show them because they sort of cut off below 2.0. They figure it doesn't really matter. But a lot of people are very concerned about this. The University of Utah, which is keeping an eye on there, and basically they're saying there have been 460 earthquakes recorded since June the 12th. Now, little something to keep in mind. Not all swarms produce an eruption. But the concern is all eruptions are preceded by a swarm. We saw that with Mount St. Helens. The reason there were so many cameras up there, the reason there were so many observations being made was Mount St. Helens had a quake swarm, a significant one. And everybody got there, and sure enough, it blew. Yellowstone will blow at some point. Hopefully not when we're alive. But it will blow. And it will devastate the western part of the United States and significant portions of Canada and Mexico. If the eruption is big enough, it could come close to being an extinction-level event through the dust in the air blocking the sun. There was a big volcano, I think it was Tambora, when it blew, we literally had a year without a summer. And there was famine all over the world. We have not, in our lifetime, in recent history, seen just how incredibly powerful acts of nature can be. We see the scars of them, the earlier calderas from Yellowstone itself, Toba, that supervolcano, the remains of Santorini in the Mediterranean. So it is an area of concern, and hopefully the swarm will die down. But sooner or later, Yellowstone is going to blow. And obviously, if you're living anywhere near close to that, have a bailout kit ready to go, because you're going to have to go. There is a question now being asked where apparently suicide rates are rising in the USA. And they're basically saying that people in the age range of 45 to 64 are matching the same rates of suicide in people 85 and older. The middle age range has been going up steadily year after year. And these people who are committing suicide, they're in a time of life when they're supposed to be enjoying the rewards of a life well spent and looking forward to retirement. So what is going on? Well, certainly part of it has to do with the economy. So many people have had their lives destroyed by the economic machinations, or they were victims of the Clintons back in the 1980s. And they may be driven to suicide just because they prefer that over homelessness. Or again, because some 20 to 25% of Americans are on prescription antidepressants, and people on prescription antidepressants have a high per capita incidence of committing suicide, that might be the factor as well. We should be finding out. Unfortunately, we've reached a position in this country where there are important questions we should be asking that we're told not to ask because it threatens some corporation's profitability. Now, as you know, a lot of people have been talking about the opiate problem in this country. We're not talking about the street opium. We're talking about prescription opiates, prescriptions being written on out, pharmaceutical companies actually encouraging, incentivizing doctors to write these prescriptions and literally create a customer class of people who are addicted to these medications. And right now, as a result of that, the United States consumes 80% of the entire world's opioid prescriptions. 80%. That tells you something very crooked is going on, because it's totally out of proportion with our population relative to other countries. Another story, this one came out of the Daily Mail. This is very unpleasant. Speaking of prescription antidepressants, children younger than six are being prescribed antidepressants by doctors who are using them as a sticking plaster. And what they found out in this study is doctors handed out 198,000 prescriptions for drugs to treat depression and anxiety to children younger than 18 between April 2015 and September 2016. Of these prescriptions, 12,700 were given to children aged 7 to 12, and 617 prescriptions went to children younger than 6. Children do not need antidepressants. It's just another marketing ploy. It's all big business. And these medications are dangerous. There is a clear correlation between prescription antidepressants and self-harm and acts of violence. Go on over to SSRIstories.com and take a look at some of those case studies that are over there. Look at all the mass shooters wagged at us by the gun grabbers who were either on or withdrawing from those medications. Meanwhile, over at a clinic used by the U.S. Air Force on that base in Qatar, apparently 135 people have been infected with blood-borne diseases, including HIV, from unclean medical tools. They weren't sterilizing them properly between usage. So, it's insane. It is just insane out there. There is a new concern that nanoparticles that are produced from combustion engines, if you inhale them over a period of time, can contribute to the development of Alzheimer's disease. And this article is asking, is that why so many city dwellers seem to be going batty? And maybe we don't really know what exposure to all this stuff is doing. We're going to take a break for commercials. We'll be right back, leading up to the top of the hour. And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Now, Energy Secretary Rick Perry is now out there saying that carbon dioxide is not the primary control driving climate change. And he is absolutely correct. The impact of human activity and carbon dioxide on the climate is almost immeasurably small. The primary control over our climate is solar radiation and the changing shape of the Earth's orbit. That's what does it. He's absolutely correct. Apparently, up there in the Klondike, or actually in the Yukon, they have an annual 150-mile bike race. Had to be canceled by snow, and yes, it's way up north in Alaska, but it is June, and you need to remember, especially this being the solstice, that up in Alaska, they actually have very warm summers because the sun is up, you know, almost all day, especially above the Arctic Circle. The sun never sets, so they get a lot of heat and energy. Apparently, despite the cancellation, four people actually completed the entire race in the middle of the snowstorm on unicycles. Boy, you have to love those Alaskans here. CNN is out there now saying that hot deserts are proof of human-caused global warming. They're still out there pushing that nonsense. They really, really are. Okay, let's see. We're looking at some other stories here. Apparently over in Olympia, Washington, at the Evergreen State College, more violence, more rhetoric. The liberals apparently are having a negative reaction to the results of yesterday's elections. And they're not handling it very well. They're not handling it all. So let's see. We were talking yesterday about high fructose corn syrup. Just in case you were wondering, it has now been renamed so that you won't see it on the label, and they're actually calling it a natural sweetener. That's what will appear on the label, natural sweetener. Even though, if you remember yesterday's guest, Dr. Rene Dufault, was saying it's a manufactured material, and the manufacturing process involves toxic chemicals. But unfortunately, you know, I know they were talking about naming it corn sugar as well. And as I was telling her, the food processors use euphemisms and deceptive labeling, and according to Renee, the FDA's primary job is making sure food is labeled accurately, and apparently they're not doing that. They're letting these companies get away with euphemisms for monosodium glutamate, and now they're letting them get away with concealing the high fructose corn syrup. And that's something I can't have. It triggers hypoglycemia in me. Regular, natural, organic sugar, I don't have a problem with. High fructose corn syrup, yeah, there's a problem. Okay, there's the music. We're going to take a break here. When we come on back, Miriam Azizi is going to be talking with us about human rights over in Israel. Hello, I'm Miriam. Welcome back to the show. And apparently, Miriam Azizi, we cannot make an internet connection to her. And let me send her a quick little note that we are trying to contact her. And okay, there we are. All right, so the phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. Let's get some phone calls coming on in here until we can get Marianne Azizi online with us. And basically, what Marianne is trying to do, she's an advocate for human rights issues in Israel, primarily issues of parenting and children. And it seems that Israel's government is as abusive of the idea of child endangerment as our own agencies are. So anyway, let's see. Apparently Planned Parenthood is launching a new propaganda campaign. It's featuring four people of faith trying to make the case that pro-life religious leaders have co-opted the faith message about abortion. Now, oh, okay, apparently we have Miriam Azizi on the line now. Miriam, are you there?
Hi. Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you for joining us on the air today. And first of all, for people who didn't hear your last interview on the show, just give us an overview of who you are and what you do and what you have been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Marianne Azizi. I'm a human rights journalist and writer. My focus is on Israel and the human rights, or lack of them, in Israel. And right now, if you remember, the last time I spoke to you, I was with a human rights activist who is now in prison for blogging, and things have exploded in Israel this year. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. We're seeing so many countries turning to tyranny and dictatorship. We've got France and Germany are talking about censoring the online community. We know there are people here in the United States who'd like to see that done despite the First Amendment. Fortunately, we just got a decision from the Supreme Court that reaffirms the principle of freedom of speech online and tells the politically correct people to take a bit of a hike. But it is a very dangerous situation when people who are out there trying to make the world better, you know, are punished for it.
I don't know what you're seeing at the moment about what's going on in Israel, but let's start with the Yemenite children. I'm sure that news has broken America by now. Yeah?
Yeah, we ran that story just a couple of days ago.
This has been going on for a long time, and the Israelis, of course, knew all about it, and those who talked about it were, you know, derided and ignored. And I can tell you that I do know that the Rabbi Uzi Meshulam, who brought this to the attention of the Israelis, was, you know, most people believe that he didn't die by accident in transit from one jail to another. His son, who I do know, was chased out of Canada with his wife and children after a very quiet life and brought back to Israel. And he's now saying that basically this is the tip of the iceberg, what you're reading. It's not even touching, you know, a small percentage of the truth.
Okay.
And he would like to tell it, but he can't because he knows that, you know, he might not live to enjoy what he's telling. Now, the Yemenite children, Michael, is not a story that isn't still going on. Up until the 90s, they were still taking children, saying they were dead. We still have stories of that. And now it's more state-sanctioned, and sadly, the organizations like Lynn Schusterman and VITSO and all of these are still taking children, including American children, who I sent you some pictures of some emaciated, drugged, medicated children that you were talking about just before I was listening to you. They're just grabbed, they're taken on spurious claims, and then they're locked behind bars with barbed wire, and they're medicated against their will. And we have a couple of American children that could be dying in a few months if nobody helps them get out. They were just snatched from school, you know, and this is what's happening. And our bloggers, three of them, are now in prison for over 4 months for blogging this stuff. And it's likely that they're asking for dozens of years of imprisonment, if not forever. The process is, it would blow your mind if I go through what's happening with bloggers, whistleblowers, activists, investigations of ministers, arrests of ministers, or even Bibi Netanyahu. This is not an anti-Israel rant, by the way. This is because I'm trying to speak for the Israelis who have no voice outside. They're good people, very, very good people. And the Yemenite, thousands of people are in Jerusalem tonight shouting corruption, 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 take down the government as we speak.
Well, let me back up here a little bit here. What is Israel's justification for just grabbing these kids and locking them away? Before you answer, we need to do a quick shout out to our on-air affiliates who are just now rejoining our network. How does Israel justify this?
Money. I mean, it's all about money. The organization who was behind the Yemenite, which you're not going to be prosecuted, is VITSO, which is the Women's International Zionist Organization. They're still doing it now. Why stop when you've got a good, you know, profit rolling? Don't think it was just the Yemenites. It was the Europeans, the Balkans. There were many, many children taken, and they are still being taken to this very day. And it's just state sanctioned because it's worth billions and billions of dollars.
Well, I understand that's the motive, and that's very often the motive in the abuses we see with various child protective services in this country. But they have to say something, to say we are taking this child because they're not being cared for correctly or
Yep, they do. I can give you thousands of examples. I've been doing this so long. Examples. We're taking you from school because you're not at school. We heard a rumor that you're not at school, so they take them from the school. We heard a rumor that your child cried last night, so we'll come and pick one of them. And then, you know, we'll leave you one so that you behave. And then if you don't, we'll take the second one. Or the social workers are trained. If you hear a rumor, take the children. Now, in Israel, up until recently, and it hasn't filtered through, women are allowed to lie by law. And social workers are women. And judges are women, a lot of them. So they can do and say whatever they want with impunity.
Let me back up here a second, because that's a real tough one. You're telling me there's actually a law in Israel that women are allowed to lie.
Yes. Up until last year, when it was repealed but not yet filtered through to the society, there's a directive in a family law, number 2.5, which men have been fighting now for, 20 years with 5,000 dead ones, because they've all killed themselves through it, which says that a woman can lie. Basically, she can say, I feel scared. I'm not sure. He looked at me in a strange way. And that's enough for a man to be locked up, criminalized, and destroyed. And, you know, those same women are social workers as well, and they can say, that child looks not so good, and it doesn't matter what the evidence says, they can override a judge. Now, there are thousands of people all over Israel every week marching against judicial corruption because there is no defense for anyone. It doesn't matter what you're not, and I can give you a line. A Supreme Court judge in the case of one of the greatest whistleblowers the world has seen, he's in the top five in the world, and he said, I'm sorry, but in Israel, the truth is not a defense. The truth is not a defense. And that is said by the Supreme Court. So where do they go? Where do these people go? And I'm going to be accused of being, you know, anti-Semitic and anti-Israel and self-hating and whatever people want to say. The truth is that Jewish people are dying in Israel in many, many numbers. And nobody cares. The Palestinian issue is a smokescreen for what is going on behind the scenes. And it's horrific what's going on in Israel right now.
And
you know, you just cannot believe what's happening. Now, I will put one plug in. There's a lady called Loretta Miller, mm-hmm. who is the candidate for Florida District 15. She's a politician, would be for the Congress. She's read everything, and she's taken it on herself to speak to the Americans about it. And she's having countless death threats already, like I do.
Yeah.
And she's only been writing for a fortnight. Michael, I'm overwhelmed with a list of things to give you. These people want help, and they, you know, stop funding the corruption and fund the people directly who are trying to do the right thing.
That was the next question I was going to ask. Is you're talking about billions of dollars being made by this kidnapping, judicial kidnapping of children. This is money that we, the American taxpayers, are being forced to send there.
And beyond. I mean, every child that's taken in Israel that goes into an emergency center or an institution sets off a cycle of a minimum of $5,000 profit per month. And there was a huge exposure in Israel last year of the welfare where they actually have to meet a quota. And the quota is 10,000 children a year. And if they don't make the quota, they just have to go and fill some beds. Now, imagine $5,000 per child, and all the whistleblowers in the ministries and the government said between 50 and 80% of that quantity do not need to be removed from their families. So imagine if they could just give somebody $1,000 to live on instead of stealing their children, what a society you'd have, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're incentivizing, you know, some very destructive behavior. But it's hardly confined to Israel. You were talking about this judge who said the truth is not a factor. We heard that from the judge up in Canada when Ernst Zundel was defending himself for Holocaust denial. And the judge said, and I'm sorry, it wasn't Canada, it was Germany. And the judge said, even if everything you're saying is true, it doesn't matter. It's illegal for you to say that. And again, it's very scary. It's you talk about women are allowed to lie by law. We didn't actually have a law, but back in the 1990s, at the top of the militant feminist rape hysteria, the presumption was that any woman screaming rape at any man, she had to be telling the truth, and a lot of innocent guys went to jail for it. And it's almost like a witch hunt mentality. Again, this idea that there is this quota system, which is driving all of this, it does seem like it is a major, major issue. And the problem you have with a government that is fighting exposure of its corruption is these things are allowed to perpetuate.
Listen, we have Bibi Netanyahu under investigation. He has a minister of the interior, Ari Dery, who went to prison for fraud. He came out, he got his job back. He's now under investigation with 16 other public officials. We have Chaim Katz, the welfare minister, who's, you know, allowing this to happen and said it's a car crash. His son is sitting in prison with one of my closest friends who's a human rights lawyer. He's sitting in there right now with him. He's up for corruption and bribery. To get his father into the government. I could list half the ministry, and the ones who don't do it are frightened. The fear permeating through, now, we have two Israels. We've got the beach and the happy people who are not touched, and they don't believe the others because of censorship. And then you have the half who are affected. And those people, no smoke without fire, couldn't be possible. Let me give you an example. We have a man who exposed horrendous corruption of the tax authority to the tune of 50 billion a year in shekels, 50 billion. Now, he has just gone to jail, in fact, he just got out, for being overpaid $100 on his car insurance. And because he didn't pay it back immediately, it's the only thing that could they could get him on. So, you know, this is the problem, that he's gone to jail as one of the greatest whistleblowers recognized by the UN.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he went to jail for $100. They'll take you to jail, but we have 1.2 million people trapped in Israel. We have Americans. Barbara Streisand's cousin is trapped in Israel. They stole his daughter. Within 5 months of arriving in Israel, they took away his daughter because the neighbors heard an argument with a 14-year-old. Normal. He hasn't seen that girl for nearly 2 years. He's a criminal. He can't leave. And he's starving to death in Israel with three young children. And he can't, he's not a human being there. He's American. We have Americans trapped in Israel like you wouldn't believe. And will the American embassy help? No. Because the warning says, don't go to Israel. It's all over your page.
Yep.
So all these Americans come thinking, yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to live in the land of my dreams. And they get here and they find out that it's a complete nightmare. And the embassy don't help. The newspapers don't care. And the Zionists, with due respect to the misnaming of what Zionists are these days, are saying, you must really hate Israel. You must hate Marianne. You want to destroy the state. No, we want to rebuild the country into something that everyone should live in. Why should these Israelis die for a dream? Why should they die for somebody else's religious belief? You know, and this is what they're you know, crying out to be helped. And they, you know, so that's why I'm here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and the phone lines are going to be open if anybody wants to call on in, 800-313-9443. You remember the ringworm affair, right?
I do.
Yeah, that Israel did, and this was apparently between 1948 and 1960, Sephardic Jewish children were supposedly being treated for ringworm with intense radiation treatments to their heads, to their brains, which of course led to all kinds of cancers and other situations. And it's horrific to think about. And we've seen atrocities like this in our own country, like the Tuskegee syphilis experiment and so forth. We have a caller from Wisconsin. Chris, aloha. Do you have a question for our guest? Chris, are you there?
Hello?
You're on the
air.
Yeah,
I'm here.
You're on the air.
Yeah. I know you're talking about Israel right now. I can call back tomorrow if you want, but my question to you, Mike, is this the new health care bill that's coming to the Senate next week, did you know that it plans to cut $800 billion in Medicaid over the next 10 years and $70 billion in Social Security disability?
Yes.
Over the next 10 years, that's part of the health care plan?
Yep.
Okay. I know you've been an advocate for Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid.
I wouldn't describe myself as an advocate. I just want the system to work as promised. My concerns with Social Security is that starting with President Bill Clinton, the cash buildup for the baby boomers has been spent on other things, and that's why we have a crisis where retiring baby boomers just aren't going to get what they should be getting. And that money in the Social Security Trust Fund, it does not belong to the government. It belongs to the American worker. But again, our government is just as corrupted as the one we're seeing on display in Israel. And we keep seeing this, and we're going to, it's time to get angry about all this stuff.
Yeah, I have to be honest, you know, I am on Social Security, disability, and, Medicare and Medicaid are my benefits. But, I guess my thing is Obamacare is a disaster. We all know that,
yes.
You know, but this, I don't see this new health plan doing anything, to help the people either. You know, I mean, so it's, they really don't care about health care in this country or Social Security or.
No, it was just a get rich quick scheme for the health insurance corporations who are very generous campaign donors. And that's what it's all about. It's, we've gone totally fascist in the economic sense. corporations and government are working together to plunder the people of every last penny they can get. All right, Chris, thank you for the call. We're going to let you go.
Yep.
We need to take a break for commercials for 3 minutes, and then we'll be back with Marianne Azizi and what's going on over in Israel. Hello, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Maryam Azizi, who is a human rights author, researcher, activist. And Maryam, listening to your description about what's going on with this economically driven grabbing of children reminds me of the idea of a complex. And, of course, Eisenhower warned us of the military-industrial complex, fearing that once it had so much money flowing through it, it would spin out of control, and nobody on the inside would want to change it because they were all profiting from it. And, of course, we know that that idea of a complex applies equally to other areas, the medical-industrial complex, the security-industrial complex, and so forth. But basically what it comes down to is this is a racket that they're running to make money, and it is costing these children.
Listen, let's just go back a bit. You know that I wrote a book because I tried to rescue my own partner, my own husband, years ago, and I couldn't save him. You know, he was captured by the lies that women could tell. He tried to kill himself at the time, and I wrote a book about it. Moving on from what happened to me, I suddenly, over the years, I realized that he wasn't the only one. But back then, it really was something you didn't talk about. You couldn't, even Israelis couldn't criticize. Because every 2 years, Netanyahu does a nice little war to keep people quiet and keep them, you know, all in place. Now, there's no war right now, because basically he can't make a war. So now the social ills are coming up, and the social ills are huge. The Ethiopians are suffering what the Yemenites have suffered.
Yes.
And I was in the middle of that protest with firecrackers and danger and horses. I've got it all videoed with 20,000 of them. And the Israelis were jealous because they wanted to do it, because they're too afraid to do it. We move on to the corruption of the tax authority, which is right to the top and right to the bottom. And people, you know, being arrested, their arms broken. Rafi Rotem, I'll name him because I know Israelis are listening, is one of the heroes of the country. He is really, really, really big with Shuki Mishal. And these people are going and being harassed every single day for telling the truth. Then you move to the father's rights, where they really don't have any,
mm-hmm.
because in Israel, a man is 100% responsible for everything. So the judge will say, sell a kidney, just go and sell a kidney. So now the fathers are doing a tour, even in Europe, where they're called the Orange Dads, and they're all in orange jail suits with handcuffs, standing silently, you know, because they are absolutely broken. Men who were millionaires are on the street homeless. They're not allowed to see their children from day one. Fathers are useless, as you know, in America. Then we take the no exit order, which is the only country in the world that actually prevents people from leaving. You just get one put on you like fries with a burger, and there's a million people who are trapped there. And they take your driving license if you're a bus driver or a taxi driver, and your bill of $200 goes to $200,000. Now, all these things that are happening, the Israelis are suing in America. They're going to America to sue. And there's a lot of lawsuits going on in the States from Israel. So how can these people be anti-Semitic when half the country is trying to sue and the other half don't know anything? How can we be anti-Semitic if all they want is their family, their children, a job, and a holiday? What is it that this man is doing to kill? These people are being murdered. There's no other way to say it. They are being murdered.
Well, unfortunately, people in positions of power and wealth and authority, we know that those positions attract the sociopathic personality. And people who think like that, the suffering they cause to other people, they can't see it. They literally do not have the capacity to see the suffering that they're causing to others. It's just, it's an opportunity to make money. We're going to make money, and we got to shovel this around, and that's, you know, just the way it's going to be until finally the people just have enough of it. We need to take another commercial break. When we come on back, we've got four people waiting on the line with questions for you. So we'll be right back after 4 minutes. And Aloha America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Maryam Azizi, a human rights author, researcher, activist, and we're going to take some phone calls. Al in Canada, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Al in Canada, are you there? Okay. Let's move on to Robert in Missouri. Aloha, Robert. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Michael, I'd like everybody to listen to your tape today for the first 2 hours and think of how you blamed everybody in the world but the Jews, who are responsible for all the things you mentioned. And now you're going to Israel and you're saying, oh, the same government is in our government, as if, you know, we're not just, we're all the people that are doing this, right? You know, it's not the Jews in our government.
Okay, well, okay, hang on.
I have to answer this.
Okay, go ahead and answer it.
I'm going to answer this by saying that the people are not their government in Israel any more than the people are their government anywhere. The Jewish people inside Israel, inside, are living in poverty. 40% are living in poverty. They are fighting for a civil society, for human rights. They're dragged into wars they don't want to be in. And they're demonized when their government is raping them day by day on every single level. So when people say the Jews, you need to look inside America for who the Jews are that are doing all of this stuff. Because I know Israel very well. I've known it for 30 years. And these Jews are not the people that are doing these criminal acts.
Yeah, as a matter of policy on this show, we will talk about the actions of governments or individuals within governments, but we don't paint a blanket brush saying the Jews this or the blacks this or the Hispanics this. That's just a rule of the show. Robert, thank you for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Tom in Utah. Aloha, Tom. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I appreciate you having this lady on. I'm quite familiar with the problem. I have been in the process of restoring families through turning cases over in the medical, in the courts, relative to medical claims. I had a mother, an Israeli mother, Ayala Kaufman, living in Chicago, who called me. She had two children. Two girls removed from her, and she and I actually had an appointment with Senator Barack Obama, and when we went to D.C. to sit with him, he refused to even talk to us. So I started working with the CCHR people and the advocates in Israel, and that's when I found out that what this dear lady is explaining is exactly fact. Criminal activity of the Child Protective Services in Israel is vile as it is here.
West.
But beyond that, what I want to ask this lady is, have you had any opportunity to react or interact with Carol Keaton Strayhorn, the comptroller of Texas, who was asked to investigate Child Protective Services in Texas, and she was appalled when she found out the amount of money that is turned over, you know, in that process, and the children literally disappearing.
They are disappearing.
She wrote a book called Forgotten Children. And if you can, you can call me, I can get you in contact with Carol Keaton Strayhorn, or you can do that through Senator Orrin Hatch as well. That this problem in Israel, I am totally familiar with, and it's an abomination just like it is here.
Thank you. You know, the abomination, you're absolutely right. There are a few little differences between the two, because remember, I know a lot of Americans in Israel. Number one is you have open courts, which doesn't mean it's any better, but in Israel it's closed courts, and that means that it is a crime for anybody to talk about what happened to them in family courts at all. I have a father who was threatened to be murdered inside the court by a lawyer, and when he published it, he's now facing a criminal prosecution. Children in Israel are not allowed to be photographed by their own parents, but the organizations outside, like SOS Villages, are allowed to use those children to advertise for billions of dollars. And what you don't have in America is the no exit order, which is you cannot leave the country. People are trapped. There are 20% of people trapped in Israel who would give their right arm to leave. Talking of people with no right arm, today the disabled people, who really do know how to stop the country, chained themselves to the entrance of Ben-Gurion Airport and wouldn't let anybody in. If you saw the videos I saw before this show where the police attacked people who were disabled in wheelchairs and they're beating them up, they're beating pensioners, they're putting them in hospital, they're breaking arms, they're beating the hell out of them, and these are people who are just standing in the streets singing or sitting in wheelchairs, and they get no medical attention once they've been arrested. And a martial law was declared in one city for five pensioners. You know, I mean, what kind of country are we talking about the size of New Jersey, you know? Sorry, but Israel's got to change, you know? It really has to change.
So does the United States, by the way. Do you have something else, Tom?
Yeah, by the way, the conditions of the courts.
Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry, the condition of the courts in Illinois is exactly like that in Israel. In other words, when you get into child protective court or into family court, you're not allowed to even speak or publish anything. In fact, I did that since I was in another state. I began to publish her story, and I was threatened. And sadly, these girls have gone through, two beautiful girls, Israeli girls, have gone through no less than six abortions apiece since they've been in the state custody.
Correct.
Had a very assertive mother. I tell her she has lots of chutzpah. She's been able, even though her parental rights were terminated, she's been able to access medical records, and she found out that her daughters have gone through half a dozen abortions apiece.
Absolutely right. I forgot to mention that I represent a civil society that goes to Geneva, but the Israeli state, the system, just decided to put them all the members of my civil society in prison to dry up my sources and stop me from speaking. And those people are likely to serve, if the rumors are true, life imprisonment for blogging. Are you serious? Life imprisonment for blogging? I watch Stephen Colbert. I watch Seth Meyers. These people are persecuting Donald Trump every day with no arrest whatsoever. You know, it is a worry. You're right, Tom, and talk to me afterwards, because our civil society won't die. We will carry on, and I will be back in Geneva again. I promise I will definitely be back in Geneva on all these issues.
All right, well, Tom.
Would you please?
Go ahead, Tom.
Can you get her my contact information? Because this case with Ayala Kaufman is still one I've been trying to get some resolution. Anyway, go to familyversusstate.org or .com. And my phone number is on there.
Okay, will do. Thank you so much.
Or I can give it to you right now if that's okay, Mike.
No, please. No, don't do that over the air. It invites harassment.
Yeah.
Anyway, my contact is on familyversusstate.com or .org.
Okay, I don't get familyversusstate.com. I'm going to try .org. A.org. And, okay, looks like I'm, I'm not able to find. Oh, I misspelled it. All right, I will hunt that down, and we'll get the number over to Miriam. I'll email it to her along with the link. Tom, thank you very much for the phone call. And before we go to another phone call, you're mentioning all these children who simply seem to disappear, and there's a very obvious question to ask, especially in light of the comment made by the judge saying you're responsible, sell a kidney or something. We know that Israel is a major trafficker on the organ traffic, and not all of it is above board and in compliance with international norms. I know that they busted this rabbi in New York about a year ago. Who was basically taking part in organ trafficking. How many of these kids are being disappeared in order to feed raw material into that traffic? Is there any way of estimating, guessing what it might be?
I'm scared to answer that because there are no official numbers ever given, ever. The Freedom of Information Act is a joke. In fact, I know people who've been arrested for asking for freedom of information. If the Yemenites, please don't think 1,000 children were taken from the news that you're reading. There are thousands more children that were taken than 1,000. Most of them were harvested. You can see 42 hearts they're talking about. Way more than that. Way more. I won't go into the Palestinian territory on organs because that's other people's stuff. But children do disappear into the system. They do put them on Ritalin, by the way, at the age of 3. And the education minister has advertised on TV, if you're not on Ritalin by the age of 3, there's something wrong with you. They put them on Respadil, and then they start to pump in 15, 20 psychotic drugs into these children way under the age of 10.
Boy, that is insane. That is insane. And again, it's all because it's the money. We drug the kids and we charge.
We have to put one little plea out, Michael. I've got to put a plea out for one father. He's American born. His children were born in America. They were taken from him. They were divided the moment the boy of 13 cottoned on to the problem. The girl ran away 40 times. So what did they do? They locked her in a mental institution, tied her to a bed, and force-fed her through her veins, intravenously, and through tubes. They force-fed her drugs until at the age now, she doesn't know that she has a father. She forgot that she was raised in America. She doesn't know she has a father, but she's been fed information, your father raped you. Can you believe this?
Yeah.
Your father raped. So she says, I think they tell me that I had a dad once, and he did these things to me. Only months ago, she was running away. The boy is half the weight that he used to be. He's an absolutely emaciated person. We don't know what disease they've put into him or whether he's got it naturally, but he now has diseases he was inoculated by. And I sent you the information, and he said, I will die for my sister. And he's 13. Why should he go through this at 13? Why should he be locked behind barbed wire and bars just for money?
That just becomes property. Yeah, it's a racket. It's a racket. All right, let's take some phone calls. We're coming up to the end of the show here. Keith in Montana, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Mike, I don't know if you have a break coming up right now, but yeah, I was just going to say, you know, on my show on Sunday, I always try to show demographics about how people around the world are all the same. And this is no different. You have the IDF soldiers who defect, was it 7,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
You have the U.S. military that are sitting there promoting their videos on YouTube of they won't be Al-Qaeda's Air Force. The problem is governments.
Yes.
They continually vet us against one another. And I mean, this is what the real issue is. And as long as we're fighting with one another, we don't see the corruption behind it. And the systemic rot that we see around the world is because these governments, look at the people that are voting for their, whether it's the Democratic Party or Republican, they want the same form of lifestyle that they want in the same form of government. And that's why you see the corruption today.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Anyway, great show, Mike. I just wanted to put that in there. That, you know, again, like I say, we're all the same. It's just that they have to keep us fighting with one another. And until we realize that society starts by looking at yourself in the mirror every morning. If you want change in the world, you have to be it, you know.
Well, we need to honestly assess the behavior of all of these governments, and maybe in the age before the internet and the independent media, these governments were just as corrupt and they were still doing all of this stuff, but we never saw it. And the difference is now we are seeing it. We can't pretend that we don't know what's going on. We do have to do something about it, especially when innocents are being harmed like this.
Who is paying for you, Michael? Who is paying for you? The difference between Israel and every other country in the world is every other country in the world is funding the murder of people inside Israel. Israel doesn't fund anyone else per se. They control the media of everyone else to stop people knowing. Mm-hmm. But you are paying for the murder of people in Israel. You are paying for the corruption in Israel, which is unique. And the Israelis feel to me like the people in the corner of Libya who went on Al Jazeera and said, please rescue me. And every time they ask for rescue, they get arrested. And I'm sadly, well, with another candidate for the Republicans, Loretta Miller, are the only two people that are prepared to risk. I'm prepared to die for the people there, because I actually think they're pretty good people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I do. They can save the Palestinians as well.
Yeah.
You know? They can save the Palestinians. Yeah. Because, you know, the Palestinians and the Israelis have been arrested by the same cops.
Okay, well...
Mike, I was going to add...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you remember there's a video on YouTube. It's something about the Ethiopian Jews that were brought to Israel and all the medical experiments and stuff done on them.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
This is no different than, like I say, here in the United States with Gitmo or Guantanamo. It's the governments that are allowed to do this, and the people do nothing. They just allow it. It's kind of like George Bush saying, you're either with us or against us.
Yeah.
The Israelis are too frightened. The fear in Israel of those that know about it is absolutely palpable. They just don't know how to protest. They don't know how to stand together. And when they do, the police back off. But when they don't, the police beat them up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a military state. It's not, you know, this is not, the government are too busy getting their escape money. And that's the truth. And I'm not against it. You're going to get so many comments here. But I am not against Israel. They can exist all day long. But please don't kill the Israelis who want to live there, who were born there. This is not fair on them, you know?
No, it really isn't. And it does seem like the situation is out of control. Over long years of being able to get away with this stuff, the system has become petrified or ossified, for lack of a better word. It's going to take a major upset for change to occur. That's why I keep telling people here in the United States, don't think about a civil war. Don't think about a revolution. Just sit back and stay calm, because sooner or later, this corrupted system is going to tear itself apart. And we need to be ready to decide what the next government will be and bring them on in. Okay, so anything else?
Mike. I appreciate it.
Oh, sorry. You are so good. Thank you for calling in.
All right. We have to take a commercial break, and then we got one more call after these words from our sponsors, okay?
Okay.
All right. And aloha. Welcome back to the show. We're going to take one more phone call. Ramsey in Canada, do you have something quick for our guest?
Hello, sir.
Hello, you're on the air.
Excuse me, I just want to tell you something about your guest. Your guest stated in the picture that all the people in Israel are like wonderful angels. See, sir, that's not true. See, sir, the government is one thing and the people are another thing. I agree with that. But the thing is, sir, if you look at the record of the people, they support the occupation. They supported the bombing of Gaza. They supported the bombing of Lebanon.
Well, hang on. That's what the media tells us. We don't know that it's true. We know that the U.S. media, when they're reporting to foreign countries, they're telling all of them that the American people are behind what's going on in Syria, they were behind going into Iraq, and so forth and so on. We have to be very careful what we think we know is happening, what we think we know is happening, on the ground in other countries, because their media is just as deceptive as ours. Anyway, we're out of time. Thank you for the phone call, Ramsey, and, Maryam, we have about another 3 minutes left to go. What do you want to share with our listeners?
Well, what he just said, you know, is nonsense. I will tell you that, simply because of the brainwashing of the Israelis as well. I need to make a statement here. We have three bloggers in jail. No evidence has been given to them. Some of them have to buy evidence. They've been languishing for 120 days, mentally tortured by the state. They're expected to serve life. Motti Label was with me on the show with you. Laurie Shemtovsky, he's there, who's a gay human rights lawyer. I don't know what they're doing to these people. And I'm saying to you, what a blogger in America is going to serve life imprisonment for criticizing your president? Give me a break. These people who are criticizing are going to jail. Please, stop funding the organizations and start to fund the people who really are on the ground and know what they're doing. And I know all the people on the ground who are straight as a die. And if anybody wants to turn their money across, please do it, because we've got to save some lives here. These people are trapped in Israel with no way out and no one to talk to. So, yeah, the guy says they funded and they care. No, I know millions of Arabs who want to help. Lots of Israelis don't talk politics. It's all about, you know, politics is not on the agenda for half of the Israelis. They can't get through the day, for God's sake, you know?
Do you have a website?
No, it's been hacked and taken down. I have a Facebook page right now. I've been hacked and destroyed every time I go on anything. Uh-huh. I'm bound to get taken down. But you can find me on Facebook. You can find me anywhere. Just Google my name. There's always somewhere to contact me. And I'm saying to you, fundraising, stop it. Stop. Every dollar kills an Israeli child or an Israeli man or an Israeli woman. Stop it. You know, please give it to the right places. We've got an American candidate who's had 3 death threats and is now wanted in Israel. And she's she's trying to fight for the people. Today I'm very passionate. You've caught me on a passionate day.
Yes,
and
very much so. Very, very much so.
Sorry about that, Mike.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, there's the music. We're out of time. Miriam, we're going to have you back on real soon and follow up on some of this stuff, because obviously we didn't have enough time to do the subject justice. So thank you very much for the phone call. We got to head on out of here and get something useful done with the rest of the day. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, here on Republic Broadcasting. Please share what you learned here today with everybody that you know. And judging by the email, a lot of people were very impressed with our guest here today. So we'll be back tomorrow. Aloha, America.